Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week, we take a tabletop mechanic and rinse first before lathering. My name is Sam Dunnewald, and my co-host today is Mark Major. First, an announcement. Dice Exploder now has a Patreon. You maybe saw a little episode about this yesterday, but if you would like to support the show and encourage me to keep making more of it, you can go to Patreon and give me money. Right now, you can see a full episode list for the rest of this season, plus the pilot of brand new podcast from me doing audio essays that are somewhere between play report, game review, and personal memoir. The first one's about my experience playing Yzeba's Bed and Breakfast, which really affected me so much I had to go and totally change the format of my show so that I could talk about it. Anyway, Dice Exploder on Patreon, thanks for listening. But now, the LARP season continues. Now that we've set a little bit of a baseline with LARP, I'm going to take us through a few mechanics that kind of walk us through the arc of play, starting today with workshops. What's a workshop? In board games, you might call it the teach. It's the period between when you like sit down to play and the actual meat of the game, where you learn the rules, learn about your characters, how they relate to everyone, maybe practice how things work and go over safety so you don't have to do as much of this stuff during play. It's like a prologue before the game starts, you know, a workshop. A lot of tabletop play does end up with some kind of workshop, like you have to learn to play, but also the cat's technique or even the idea of a session zero might qualify. But I think in tabletop, we're much less intentional with designing this setup time to fit each individual game rather than just assuming it'll happen. And here today to talk with me about all that is Mark Major. Mark is a resident smart guy on Discord across like every server I'm in. He suggested this week's topic and I was mad I hadn't thought of it myself. He's also attended and run a ton of LARPs. He's produced LARPs on stage for an audience. Plus he's got his own games on itch, including Veins of Corruption, a mega dungeon currently itch funding its way to completion. There's a link to that in the show notes. And with that, let's get into it. Here is Mark Major with workshops. Mark, thanks for being on Dice Exploder.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Such a treat. We are today talking about workshops in LARP, and I'm interested to hear from you, what's a workshop when we talk about it in this context?
Yeah, workshops are things that we do before a LARP to either set the stage for the LARP, set expectations, go over, you know, safety stuff or mechanical stuff, and basically just getting people ready to play before just jumping in. And they last for, you know, a few minutes or a couple days, depending on the LARP.
Yeah. Can you give me a game or a experience that had a workshop and exactly what the process was for it?
So the most recent LARP that I did was last fall in October, I think it was. We did Chaos League's Sahara Expedition, which meant we flew to Tunisia. We drove out into the Sahara Desert and spent a couple of days out there searching for artifacts and accidentally summoning Elder God.
Holy.
So yeah, it was an amazing experience. And that is, I mean, all LARPs require some level of safety and explanation stuff. But being an hour away from even the tiniest bit of civilization in a pretty hostile environment with 80 other people, it definitely requires some setup.
Yeah.
So, the workshops happened before we went out into the desert at a hotel that we were staying at relatively nearby. And yeah, it was maybe half a day and it broke down. We did kind of like the general introduction of the LARP team, who the runners were, who, you know, was going to be in character, who was going to be out of character, people who were jumping in as NPCs, people who were going to be present, but like not in fiction so much. So we kind of like know who to go to if there are things we need to ask someone about.
If someone starts dying of heat stroke. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And we had, there was two medical tents, one kind of in character and one out of character. So if we needed to go get quote unquote drugs for our character, we would go to the medical tent run by the Foreign Legion. If we were having sunstroke or dehydration or a headache or anything else worse, we would go to the actual medical tent staffed by actual medical personnel.
Yeah.
And they took really great care of us. So they went over, like, you know, when meals are going to be, how to get water and coffee, importantly, how to go to the bathroom in the desert. The answer to that is, go to the bathroom in the desert. It's the world's largest litter box. So
yeah.
And, you know, general sort of logistical stuff like that, where we're going to be sleeping, you know, who we're going to be sleeping with, how we're going to be dividing into departments or whatever. So just kind of like logistical stuff, how we're going to get to the desert. We're going to be driven out there by some local guides. We're going to be going in groups, you know, all that stuff. So there's the logistical part there of who's going where and when we're going and when we're coming back.
Yeah.
And then we went into the mechanics of the game itself, which game-wise were pretty light. There were a few things. Basically, there was some framing things. So they had loudspeakers set up that would play basically a recording from someone in the future who had been on the expedition, kind of going back and describing the descent into madness. That sort of like broke our trip up into chapters there. And there was a really light mechanic for our, they called it the descent into madness, when basically we had a journal and at some point it would say, hey, grab someone and go out into the desert and have this kind of a scene with them. The quote unquote madness stuff was taken care of very nicely, I think, as opposed to a lot of, you know, Cthulhu-based stuff you're going to see in a lot of places.
Yeah. Enumerating your sanity is not something I'm a fan of on this show.
Yeah. And so this was nice. It was just like, you know, as a result of these stressors, both in the environment and in your past, act accordingly, which was cool. And that was mostly it for mechanical stuff. There was, you know, other things like, you know, these departments are going to be going out in the desert and digging things up and putting things together. And these people are going to be in charge of logistical stuff and communicating with these people. So less like game mechanics, I guess, and more just like how the expedition is going to work.
It sounds like there's a lot of onboarding for like practical safety, some emotional safety. Then there's like learning how the like rules of the LARP, the small number that there are going to work. And then also it sounds like there's a getting to know the fiction that you would know as a character going into it, right? Like who you are, you probably know in advance on a game like that, but you're getting to know the like other people around you, what your relationships are kind of like, that kind of workshopping too. Yeah.
Yeah. They had written up some extensive character background stuff that we got months ahead of time. And then part of like, not part of the official workshop, but kind of the first like scene of the game was a little greeting ball or party at the hotel beforehand. So we got to kind of mingle and meet up with characters and stuff there. So that was cool. And then the safety stuff was really well done. We did an hour and change on that, I think. Pretty standard LARP safety stuff, the cut and break kind of stuff, eyes down, you know, basically like we can stop things when we need to. And we had keywords to use if we were like, no, for real, because people were, you know, having breakdowns or, you know, having physical symptoms of whatever's going on in fiction. And so we had to have a way to tell both the LARP runners and the other players, like, this person's okay. They're just acting.
Yeah.
Heart attack or breakdown.
Is Mark having a breakdown or is Mark's character having a breakdown?
Exactly. Or do they need to go to the medical tent?
Yeah.
And then, you know, same for just like, you know, ex-cardi kind of emotional, like, we don't want to do that right now stuff.
And I've recorded an entire episode on safety tools in LARP that are very similar, I think, to a lot of safety tools in tabletop games. And that'll be, I think, coming out maybe next week even, or shortly after this episode. So if people are curious about that topic, keep a lookout for that. Okay, so we've kind of laid out here like what is a workshop, practically speaking. We've got an example here. We'll probably get to other examples later on. But I want to zero in and really underline on something that I think we've made implicit here and make it explicit, which is, as I've been recording this series, I've been reading the Nordic LARP book, LARP Design. And one thing that is in that book is this idea that the LARP begins the first time someone hears about your LARP. That from the minute people start imagining what the LARP is going to be, they are playing the game and the experience that you can design has begun, right? Like there might be the LARP itself in the middle where people are actually doing the thing, but that's the room you have to design in stretches all the way back to that moment and continues long after the actual LARP is over. And I don't even know like how to have a conversation about like about this, but like workshops are obviously a huge part of that, but you can back up even before workshops, right? You can think about marketing. You can think about pitching the game. You can think about talking in character long before the game starts, or all these other components. And I'm curious to hear you talk about, like, okay, how do you approach that? Like, I think game designers in the tabletop space, like people listening to this show, are often thinking about, like, how do you design the game at the table? But, like, what do you even keep in mind when you are thinking about designing the experience outside of the LARP itself?
Yeah, the LARP design book does a great job of going through that. And I think one of the, like, key points they hit is the idea of setting expectations there, right? You go to the website for the Sahara thing, and they're like, this is the big blockbuster thing. It's very expensive. And here's great pictures and descriptions of other runs. And so you go into that with an expectation of what it's going to be like. Or, you know, if you go to the Wizard School one or whatever, as opposed to, like, hey, I'm inviting a half dozen people over to my house to have, like, a Viking funeral LARP or whatever.
Yeah.
Or we're going to be sad robots. That's a very different expectation of what the experience is going to be like, you know, what the production value is going to be like, if any. And I think it's really fascinating how what the players and the LARP runners imagine the experience is going to be like and how that colors the actual experience. I think you can have like the exact same experience, but how you're led into it could make it feel very different in the moment and afterwards when you're thinking about it.
That's really interesting. Can you give me an example of what you mean?
Yeah. One of my favorite LARPs that I played and run a few times is the Tribunal. And it is, you know, 12 people in a room. I played it at cons where it's just, you know, a small ballroom or convention room. I played it on stage. I played it at people's houses. And, you know, the expectation is like, hey, we're going to go in and inhabit these characters. And basically the only mechanics are, here's your characters, talk for a while. And going into it with kind of that, it's not a blockbuster expectation, and it's just a plain room with people with no costumes, really. But the content of the LARP play and the relationships and the things that emerge from them are so compelling and strong that everything else kind of fades away. And so going in with those lowered expectations of what it's going to be really enhances the actual hour or two that you're there. And then on the other side, you know, talking about this Sahara LARP again, fantastic experience all around. Everyone did an amazing job putting it together and running it. There were parts during it, and talking with my partner Nick afterwards, who also went, you know, there were parts where, you know, we were in the desert for 2 days, and there are times when we're like, huh, it's just us, like, we're not in character, really. We're sitting here on a dune looking at this, you know, amazing landscape and beautiful camp that we have, and being like, I don't really feel like I'm LARPing right now.
Yeah.
Because there's this huge expectation of, you know, everything's, you know, so immaculately designed, and every moment is curated, and everything's going to be fantastic. And it was overall, but there's some times when you're just like, huh, I'm just kind of sitting here. I don't really know what to do. And I think going into that with the expectation of this is going to be the best thing ever really affects that.
So do you think that was a failure of design on behalf of the organizers there? Or is that just sort of something that happens in a longer form LARP like that, kind of inevitably?
I feel like it's got to happen. I mean, I've talked, like, the people there, some were, you know, they LARP on that scale several times a year. And so I've heard stories where, you know, oh, we were on this spaceship and we, like, went to sleep in character, and there was never a moment where I wasn't, you know, this sergeant or whatever. And that sounds exhausting to me.
Yeah.
And that's part of, like, they talk about how there's, like, the plot that you set up beforehand, the story that happens as you play, and the narrative you tell afterwards. And I feel like some of that narrative is definitely colored by those expectations as well. Like, oh, this was a huge setup, so in my mind I'm remembering how intense and immersive it was every second. where it's not that I don't believe them. I find that it's just hard for a human brain to maintain that level of being in character for so long. And I think that's just the thing that happens. So I don't want to say it's a failure of design. And having written a few LARPs, there were points where I was like, I would do this part a little bit differently, but I can't fault someone putting on a thing for almost 100 people in another country with...
Yeah, clearly an incredible and impressive feat to put on essentially any LARP, in my opinion. I mean, we all know how hard it is to get 4 people in a room to play a tabletop RPG. Imagine getting 12 people in a room to play the Tribunal or 150 to the middle of the Sahara, right? But I think I'm trying to bring it back to workshops of, and maybe this is a way to do it. If the goal of a workshop is to kind of get everyone on the same page, to like properly set people's expectations and teach people the game, like I see the obvious benefits of teaching everyone the game, right? You kind of need to do that to then be able to play the game. Although I've certainly played games with people who didn't know how the game worked. This is such an obvious question, but what are the benefits of getting everyone on the same page through a workshop?
Yeah. I mean, the main benefit is everyone, in theory, is there to play the same game. If you show up to a Sad Robot LARP and you come with the attitude of like, oh, we're going to be funny robots, you're not going to have the same experience that everyone else is going to be having. You're probably going to be degrading other people's experiences as well there. And it's the same as any tabletop game, right? If someone's here to hang out with friends, someone's here to, you know, min-max their character, someone's here to tell a deep emotional story, those people are having different expectations and different experiences, and the game as a whole might feel off, right?
And you don't want anyone showing up to play Stew Pot with the intent of like killing a bunch of orcs.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the LARPs. And I think it's very important in tabletop. I think it's more important in LARPs because there's kind of a either unsaid or said expectation that once you start, you're playing until the game is over. You're not taking breaks to go get snacks or talking out of character most of the time. So getting those expectations set up before we start is really important so that it's harder to course correct, I think, during a LARP. There are techniques to do so for sure. And you know, it's difficult managing 4 players, much less a couple dozen. So if people are not having the experience that you want them to have as a game designer or LARP runner, it's harder to A, find that out in the first place, but then B, correct for it.
Yeah. It does feel like a lot of LARP safety and a lot of the workshop thing that we are talking about here is built towards trying to avoid piercing that immersion bubble and to pierce it as gently as possible when you need to.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear, there's obviously a value that comes from that sense of immersion. Like, I've experienced it when you are sort of in character without breaking a scene for a long period of time. It almost feels like a long take in a movie where the tension just like keeps building up. You just kind of like keep going deeper. Like, not having that break ratchets things up. And I see why people value it that way. But like, from your perspective, like, why and how do people value it?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to talk about immersion because sometimes people are not talking about the same thing.
Yeah, so let's actually start there. Like, what is immersion for you?
Yeah, I think often when people talk about immersion, they are talking about, like, I don't want my character to do things that they don't know about in the world. Like, I don't want my character to worry about, you know, hero points or luck or story beats or whatever. Like, they're just in the world. And I think that is not usually what I mean when I'm talking about immersion. What I'm talking about when I'm talking about immersion is that, you know, I feel immersed in experience, like you're saying. I, as a player, am kind of feeling and behaving and acting and talking as this character. It's so interesting because, you know, clearly, especially at tabletop, you know, we're sitting there at a table looking at other people across the table or on screens or whatever. So there's that end of the spectrum to, you know, we are in a 360 designed environment. We're all, you know, in costume and props and everything, and we're talking with, you know, accents or with the jargon or whatever. And I think it's easier to get that immersion from that. I think that the design experience can definitely help that kind of immersion. with different aspects, but the immersion itself happens in your brain. I've definitely had both at a gaming table and on stage and in LARPs that, you know, were not huge designs, like deep, 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 like I'm this character and I'm doing the thing. And it's, I don't want to say like, you know, it's a skill issue, like you have to practice to do it, but you know, we play games to have fun. Also, you can get better at playing games, just like you can get better at being an actor and embodying a character through practice. And some people are not into that necessarily. And that's awesome. That's totally great. People play games for different reasons. But I think with practice, it's easier to slip into a character and easily slip out for a moment and be like, okay, I'm super immersed in this character and we're having this really intense scene. Oh, something happened. I can pop out for a second, be me for a minute. We can talk about stuff and then dive immediately back in. Just from, you know, practice doing character stuff and mask work and all that sort of trance state mumbo jumbo. That's great.
Well, I do think that there's like a design skill here too, right? Where like I've been to immersive theater productions where the idea is, oh, right now you are like actually in an art museum looking at some art. Or like I went to like a Crime and Punishment adaptation for theater that took place in a warehouse with a bunch of people running around, right? And they were like clearly trying to do the 360 immersion, like Sleep No More kind of thing. And I felt way more immersed in like a conference room at Big Bad Con pretending to be a robot because the design of the experience was better.
Yeah, and I think that also kind of speaks to the expectations thing because, you know, I've been to Sleep No More a bunch of times and stuff like that. And sometimes setting that expectation of we're having these high production values and it's immersive, not always, but sometimes makes it feel like, oh, I am going to a show to watch this thing, even though everything around me is perfect. Like there's a detachment of like, oh yeah, there's an interesting performance I'm watching.
Yeah, but that's the magic of it, is that I'm in this cool museum looking around, right? Like,
yeah, and that's another like another way to talk about immersion. Like, do I feel like the environment is real? Not necessarily do I feel like I'm a character in the environment.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to...
I want to come back to workshops and immersion.
Yeah. So talking about workshops, creating immersion in not the best way. Early on, I was doing some LARP stuff on stage. I did the Tribunal a couple times. And then I did a LARP series at a theater in Austin, the Hideout, where I produced, you know, four short LARPs on stage, one a week. It was the Tribunal, Juggernaut, Previous Occupants, and then I wrote one for the fourth one, science fiction one. But the Tribunal, everyone was excited about it because they'd seen, you know, cool dramatic pictures and stuff from before and all that. And so the way that I usually done stuff was, we kind of like, everyone has a, you know, half page character, and they get a chance to sit down and read them before. And I have people go through exercises like, oh, all the characters are named after animals. So there's stork and dog and elk and peacock. And so everyone kind of like does some, you know, movement stuff and walking around, and they transform into an animal and come back and all that kind of stuff. And that's worked out great. During this run at the theater, I had some other logistical stuff to take care of producing that. And so I had a friend of mine help run the workshop, and he was a Marine. And he's like, it's a cool if I like kind of break them a little bit before they go on, because it's a, you know, dystopian, you know, militaristic, horrible setting. And so I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, and he had them, you know, running around and yelling at them and doing push-ups, and it looked miserable. The show was great. Everyone said that they had a great time, but, you know, improvisers, everyone's always having a great time, even if they're not, right?
Yeah.
And so I could tell that was not a great decision. I talked to some folks afterwards and they were having some bleed issues, like I felt like I was really immersed in that character, but then afterwards, like, I felt really bad about these things that I did through my character, or, you know, had some like emotional hangover from, you know, being in that, like being thrown at that intense situation, being in it, and then, you know, kind of like, okay, show's over, everyone go home. Yeah. Because we didn't do a post workshop. We didn't do a like debrief thing. Everyone like, show's over, let's go.
God, debriefs really are sort of like at least as important as workshops themselves. Yeah.
D-rolling and all that stuff. And that was, you know, one of the first ones I ran, and I did a bad job.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what is D-rolling? What might you do in a debrief or a post show?
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be the, you know, the debrief afterwards or the post workshop can be anything from just like a very short ritual, like, hey, we're just going to like dust off and shake it off and we're not our characters anymore. Let's go. To, you know, talking about your experience, kind of doing some work to be like, I was this character and I'm going to talk about my real life some more, and then kind of contextualize the experience. And, you know, if there were some things we need to unpack or, you know, express during that part, just like a more gentle come down.
I don't know that I've ever played a LARP that didn't afterwards come with a sort of like, okay, let's do a little book club about the game that we just played, because it's such an emotionally raw medium so much of the time. And even when it's not, it's usually like very fun, I want to like share a bunch of stories of what happened kind of medium that people really want to like start talking about it right away. A really common one I've seen for D-rolling is just like, okay, I had my like character name tag on, I'm going to just like take it off and put it aside, and then say one way I'm not like my character. And, you know, you might do a lot more, you might even do less than that, depending on the LARP. But that has always seemed like a good place to start, to just sort of put some emotional distance between yourself and the game that just happened.
Like, here's something I'm taking from the experience, here's something I'm leaving behind, all that great stuff.
We also, we're just laying out a lot of basics here today, but you mentioned bleed as a concept, and I know what bleed is, but tell the people listening what bleed is, because this is also something that I think basically anyone familiar with tabletop games is going to be familiar with, but might not know the word for.
Bleed is the concept that even though you're playing a character, you are still a person, and you know, you are going to bring some stuff from yourself over into your character, and similarly, you're going to bring some stuff from your character back to yourself after the game. And you know, it's not a bad thing. I think people can talk about it like, oh, like, this is a great thing because I had so much bleed, or like, oh, I had so much bleed and this was bad. Like, it's just a thing. I don't think there's any value or moral judgment about it.
I have experienced both positive and negative bleed. Yeah.
I think most of the time people talk about bleed in the post sense, like, oh, I had this intense experience with my character and it's affected me this way. I think it's also important to be aware of what you're bringing in from yourself that's going to affect your play as a character. But yeah, just something to be aware of.
Yeah, and just to put an even more specific example on it, I've heard bleed in and bleed out to describe the directionality of it, right? So bleed in is like Sam is in love with Mark, and now Sam's character is in love with Mark. And bleed out is Sam's character is in love with Mark's character, and now Sam maybe has some feelings for Mark that we need to like work on or like set aside and move away from. You're absolutely right. I think that there are a lot of conversations around bleed that have a moral judgment about it being good or bad
in
one way or another. And I think that that's a really, really bad way of thinking about it, that it is sort of a thing that happens. It's an effect. Bleed is something that happens. It can be a really positive experience. It can be a really negative experience. It's certainly a high octane experience a lot of the time, right? And so I think one of the reasons that we want extensive safety tools and stuff is for exactly this. Like, this is one of the things that is most likely to make you unsafe in a LARP, in my experience.
Yeah, and it's not even like deep emotional, like, oh, we're in love with each other, or we hate each other, or I'm, you know, traumatized. I've had experiences where, you know, the LARP was just a fun, great, goofy time, and we are all just having a good time. You know, come together at a con, play, have a great time, and then leave. And even though there's not like a lot of intense emotionality there, there's the feeling like, oh, we're best friends now because we had this great time. And I've seen things like not go great because of that, because that wasn't talked about. Like, we're not best friends. We just played a game together.
Yeah. Okay. So workshop, bleed, debriefs. And like we've talked about immersion here as like a concept and what it is, but I want to maybe come back to and underline like when immersion is good, why is it good? And what do you love about it? And when immersion is bad, or like the goal of seeking immersion, when can that lead to trouble?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. I think that goes back to why we play games at all. And speaking just for myself, like part of the reason I play games is to experience something that I'm not going to experience in my real life, like at the core level of it. Either, you know, whether it's a board game and I'm thinking tactically in a way that I'm not used to thinking, or a LARP or role-playing game where I'm inhabiting a character and seeing the world, you know, from their viewpoint and experiencing it from their viewpoint. Just to be not myself for a little bit, if that makes sense. And so immersion, like the way that I like to talk about immersion, where, you know, we are feeling as if we are the character to some extent, it is a very useful tool to do that. I talked about mask work a little bit before, and I feel like at best, like putting on this mask and you are almost a passenger, like this character is doing stuff and, you know, you have control of your facilities and you are in control of the situation, but you are to some extent, like this happens a lot when I'm, you know, running a role-playing game, you know, tabletop game, and NPC needs to do a monologue or a player throws a twist in and Mark brain kind of shuts off a little bit and goes away and the character speaks. And I'm just like, wow, yeah, that's interesting, bud. Wow, I didn't think about that. And it's like, yeah, letting things happen that you yourself wouldn't necessarily make happen consciously, even though it is you. It's so hard to talk about because I feel crazy. Because like, oh, and there's, I don't know if they talk about it in the book, but there's the concept of like, I think they call it like meta immersion, where it's like you're fully immersed and you are experiencing and acting through this character, but you are aware of the process that you like, maybe even like, oh, we've practiced this process before, these techniques. Like, you're fully aware that you've allowed this other thing to control your words and actions for a little bit. If something happened, like, you can step in and be like, we're done here. But allowing yourself to sort of surrender and give up that control to something that is already inside you is like one of the best experiences in the world for me when playing stuff like that.
It does feel like a maybe darker side of immersion might come from, or I've even seen come from, people valuing their own experience of what you just described at the expense of other people and other people's experiences.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think about this concept from LARP, playing to lift, which is about going out there and trying to, you know, see what Mark is trying to get out of the game and like play to help support that, right? And if we all are doing that, if we're all being a little bit selfless, then like people are giving you gifts all the time in the game too, and like everyone's game becomes better out of it. And I fully believe that and see that. And in some ways I feel like it can be harder to do that while also being fully immersed.
For sure. Yeah. And I think they call it meta immersion, or no, inter immersion, where you're aware of everyone else's stuff too while you're doing
it. Yeah. But I also think like a tale older than the hobby itself is, well, that's just what my character would do, right? That like people using the idea of immersion as an excuse for shitty behavior. And I think also like practicing that kind of meta immersion that you were talking about is absolutely a skill. And there is a point where you might get to immersion while losing a lot of self-awareness, and then you stop looking for safety stuff as much, right? Like you can end up in a difficult spot. And I think some people, when they really value the immersion number one, like that's shitty, like quickly.
Yeah. And that comes back to like we were talking about, just like being a good adult person, where like even if, you know, I'm in this character and I'm doing some stuff and I say some things that actually hit someone, and you know, whether we have the ability to grab our safety tools at the time, it's happened. And so we can either, you know, in the moment or afterwards be like, they might say something, or you can be like, oh, you know, I saw that expression cross your face when I said that. I know that was you and not your character. And like, let's talk about it. Did I mess up, or was that a thing that is cool, or is it not cool, and how can we repair that? Yeah. So that's, yeah, it's definitely a skill. And it's, there's the weird line between like that sort of masking stuff and like the idea of like immersion as kayfabe, the wrestling term where like we're pretending that all this stuff is real, but everyone knows that it's not. Like, we know for sure that we are putting on this show and we are acting up. I don't know, like it, there's commitment to it, but there's not that sort of like passenger feeling, like when you're doing, so we can like play this heightened version of ourselves. And I think there's that subtle distinction of, you know, between like we're playing this super hard, but there's a emotional or personal distance to it versus I am immersed in this thing and I'm more of a passenger and I need to be more aware of when I need to take the control back to make sure everyone's okay.
Cool. So we've covered a ton here really quickly. I feel like this has been an episode full of like introducing concepts more than it has been sort of deconstructing those concepts. Great maybe workshop for the little LARP series that I'm doing here on the show. Oh, but like, I want to make sure we spend some time coming back to like, okay, how might you bring these kinds of concepts to a tabletop RPG? What would be the benefits of like an RPG workshop? What would an RPG workshop look like? Because it would be different. Every LARP workshop is different. You know, what would a tabletop workshop look like? And also, like, are tabletop games already doing workshops? Like, what is the equivalent in the tabletop side of things?
Yeah, and I think we don't call them workshops. And I think that, you know, whether that's to our detriment or not is up for debate. But I think we do have some things that exist in that space already. And we have, you know, there's Session Zero, which is to align people's expectations, hopefully, to get everyone on the same page, whether it's through character creation or world building or whatever. We have tools like CATS, where we go over the, you know, concept, aim, tone, and setting going into a game. And that's like a briefer, like, shotgun approach to that. And some games include that, you know, in the text of the game, like Nola Bay and The Between, and those games have, I think, is one of the best text innovations. It has like a, here's the script to follow when you're running your first session. Like, go through this, make sure you're saying this, do CATS, do safety, take a break, do this. It's almost like a little mini workshop. That said, I think we could be more explicit about it. And I don't really see that as much. There are some little like motions towards it back with some Forge stuff, I think, but I haven't really seen a lot recently aside from those things.
Yeah. And so first I would say that I think the entire process of character creation is like part of a workshop, right? And that the best form of character creation, in my experience, is not just sort of let's get all the numbers in the right place and not just let's sort of like conceptualize who these people might be, but also thinking about like, how are they going to relate to each other? Like establishing relationships, maybe thinking about long-term arcs for those characters, like all that kind of setup work that is going to make play better.
Yeah. Who are we together? Not individually. Yeah.
And then I also feel like in the tabletop scene at large, we have a lot of these like components of workshops, like even the Brindlewood Bay, like CATS style stuff that you're talking about, I think is good and a step in the right direction. But I think that we are really not doing the designing of the experience overall, right? Yeah. We're sort of like throwing little bits and pieces in there up front because people have learned that like, oh yeah, it's like helpful to make sure you tell people what the X card is. It's helpful that people know what the game is and are excited about it before they sit down. But like really thinking about the design of the game begins the first time someone hears about the game, like all the way through when we're getting to in character, or in our case, just like sitting down and actually like doing the procedures in the game. There is so much more room to make that session zero and pre-session zero and like session 0.5, like all of that more cohesive, more streamlined, more like working together and pointing in the right direction and done in the right order and all of these other things that I think we are not doing and that people could really think about.
There's an interesting bit. I just reread the LARP design book when you mentioned it, so I just blasted through it. There's a bit they talk about with some of the pre-stuff where people will get on a, you know, Discord or mailing list and kind of like do in-character play before the LARP starts. I saw some of that. We did a mega game of Beam Saber where we had you know, five different crews running in the same world and stuff. And, you know, we all kind of like made our characters, and then there was a lag time before production started, a couple months. And so a lot of people were kind of like, you know, talking about their characters and fantasizing what their arcs and stuff would be and kind of doing a little role playing and stuff. And I think one of the points that was brought up there is that's super fun and great for the people who are doing it. A lot of people will not do that. And then when the game starts, there's like a little gear grinding when the people who have already done a lot of pre-play don't mesh well with people who just like jumped in and like, cool, you know, this is my third game this week. What are we doing? And so like making that kind of thing more explicit, like from the GM or game runner or whatever, saying like, cool, we are definitely going to do this. Or, you know, on the other side, like, you know, don't talk about your character backgrounds until we get into play. We'll do that in play, and sort of like getting everyone on the same page there. Also the concept of warm-ups, right? Before we do a show, we do warm-ups a lot of times, most of the time. And I think that was going to help a lot with, you know, every game has different needs and requirements, and it's hard to jump into certain kinds of games if you're not like already super invested in that. I was just listening to a most recent RTFM podcast where Max, one of the hosts, is talking about how they don't like heavy scene-based role-playing stuff sometimes because it's hard for them to just be like, go role-play and be in a thing. And I've definitely seen that with a lot of other people in various other games. I think if that is part of the expectation of playing the game, there should maybe be some sort of, you know, improvising or role-playing warm-up or on-ramp or something, so you're not just like coming in from work or from dinner and expected to be an elf immediately.
We're doing a whole episode in this series about scene framing also.
Yeah.
Look forward to that. And I also feel like I want to do a whole episode on this book I read called The Art of Gathering, which is just about how to throw a party, basically.
Oh, cool.
It's this like professional event organizer who has run events for United Nations style people, right? Like really important people. And like one of the chapters is like, do not be chill. Do not bring your chillest self to my party. Like you want to be really clear about what your event is about. And then you want to only invite people that are on board for that event. And like, if that means excluding someone that everyone at this event is going to love and going to feel weird that you have excluded, tough. and in that, I'm thinking about it right here in that sense of like, you know, I bet that Beam Saber game goes a lot better if you're very explicit up front that like, you're expected to come do the Discord role playing in advance, right? And if you don't, we're going to kick you the fuck out. Like, and that's, and we love you and we want to play other games with you. And like, you don't want to do the thing that we all want to do. And like, we're going to have a better time when we're all on the same page.
Yeah. Not every game is for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I want to maybe close out here by shouting out one of the pieces of design I am most proud of having done in a Space Train, Space Heist. So this is my like very silly game about space robbing a space train, right? But my favorite part of this was at the very top of this game, I have a little workshop. This is a very goofy game. It's a GM-less game. And I have always had this experience in GM-less games where some players show up and they have a really tough time accepting consequences for their characters. They like a certain kind of person really wants their character to not get in trouble and or does not feel like they have permission to narrate other people's characters getting in trouble, right? And I was also inspired by, I remember going to Gen Con back in the like early aughts and seeing the Legend of the Five Rings people, and before every one of their tournaments they would stand up, you'd be like 100 people at a time would all like stand up and do this like like call and response, like shout through the event hall that was somehow related to the game. I thought that was so hilarious. And so I wanted to design this game where like let's get people comfortable with doing consequences and let's also like be a little silly in front of whoever we are playing around. I imagined like doing this thing at the Games on Demand table at Gen Con where you'd be doing this weird little workshop and everyone at the nearby tables would be like, what the hell is going on over there? But the like getting comfortable with that is like part of the thing that I want you to do in the workshop, right?
Yeah.
And so the way it functions is you read out this. The following statements are not always true, but they are always true while playing Space Train Space Heist. Before playing, go around the circle and take turns speaking these truths aloud. After each statement is read, everyone should respond with, this I believe. So you get like, it is right and good to be kind to my fellow players. This I believe. Great. And, you know, you're walking down through like, you know what's fun? Doing something absolutely heckin' lunk-headed in pursuit of a preposterously lofty goal. You know what else is fun? Heaping well-deserved consequences onto my friends after they've done something absolutely heckin' lunk-headed in pursuit of a preposterously lofty goal. And so forth. And then I ended it with just, hey-ya! And so people have to like do that silly thing, right? And like, you know, you're like chuckling over there already. And
oh, it's so great, yeah.
This thing is like really, really, it's fucking perfect. I've watched people do this while I was not playing, and it really just immediately takes people from like, what's this like silly thing that we're gonna do, to like, I'm in on this silly thing. And that's the power of a good workshop, I think. Like, this is, I think, a great example of something people could be putting in more tabletop games.
100%, yeah.
Mark, any final words on workshops or what you want people to take away?
Just do them. Yeah. So people who are listening to this obviously have some interest in LARP because it's part of a series about LARP stuff. I think for a long time, and still partly, there's been some stigma attached to LARPing, even from role players. And I get over that. LARP has so many amazing tools that we can bring into our games and vice versa. And, you know, not only LARP, but, you know, theater stuff or board games or immersive theater or community organizing. Look outside of role-playing games, figure out ways to use the things that you learn from outside role-playing games to get people more into your games, and everyone's going to have a great time.
Yeah. I can't believe I didn't ask you more about being in the fucking desert and what that was about. Like, okay, that's another whole episode. We'll do that one with Carol Burby.
Amazing.
Mark, great. Thanks so much for having been on Dice Explode. This is
fabulous. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Yeah. All right, fellow students, today's homework assignment is straight down the middle. Go take an RPG that doesn't have any guidelines for how you start playing it and write a workshop for it. Or you know what? Maybe a lot of games don't want a workshop. Just think about that first-time player experience, what you would want out of it, and how to design that experience to be the best it can be. Thanks again to Mark for being here. You can find them on Blue Sky at Mark Major. That's M-A-J-C-H-E-R. They've got actual plays on YouTube and cool games on Itch, including Veins of Corruption, a Mega Dungeon, currently Itch funding. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky at Dice Exploder or on the Dice Exploder Discord. You can support the show on Patreon. Patreon. Woo! My games are at sdunnewall.itch.io. Our logo was designed by Spore Garee. Our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray. Chris Greenbrier edited this episode. Thank you, Chris. And our ad music is Lily Pads by my boy, Travis Tesmer. And thanks, as always, to you for listening. See you next time.